Hi, everyone, and welcome to DevRaga Personal Finance. My name's DevRaga. This is episode 2 with an interview with Marley Vieira, who's a will and estate legal professional working at Nest Legal. So welcome, Marley. Thanks very much for this second episode.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
In this episode, we're going to specifically talk about what happens when you die. What are the processes? Some of the definitions. I think it's really important because a lot of the things that I've read, very, very detailed about what happens and how to create a will, but all the back end stuff, I think it's worthwhile knowing as well. So Marley, you ready for part 2?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's get started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, if you're new to this channel, remember the three main aims: education, empowerment, and entertainment. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact me via Twitter and Facebook. That's the main medium that I prefer to get questions on. Now, if you're new to this particular episode, go back and listen to the previous episode, because none of this may make much sense if you haven't really understood the foundations of will and estate planning. And we talked a lot about it and talked about executors and beneficiaries and testamentary trust and EPOAs and empty medical treatment decision makers, organ donation. And by the way, if you're not an organ donor, consider it, please, because I think it's important. I think Australia has one of the lowest rates of organ donation in the world. We also have one of the lowest rates of blood donation in the world. We need to change that. So in this episode, we want to focus specifically on administration of estate. And we talked a little bit about the role of the executor. I want to go in a little bit more detailed about this. They obviously, once you die, they take responsibility in terms of administering your estate as per your wishes. They also have a responsibility of defending the will against challenges. Can you talk a little bit about that defense element of it?
Absolutely. That is one of their biggest roles. So your executor has the obligation to defend any claim against your estate. They need to try and uphold the terms of the will wherever possible. So, you know, that can raise some sticky situations if an executor wants to claim against an estate. They're effectively suing themselves and need to stand down in that instance.
Yeah, it's tricky. So, and we did talk a little bit about executors can also be beneficiaries, and I think executors can also be guardians. There's nothing stopping executors from being guardians,
right,
for your children. We talked a little bit about, you know, in the previous episode, they don't need to get paid, but, you know, there may be provisions in it they get reimbursed because it takes a lot of time. How much time does it take to be an executor? What sort of time commitment is required if listeners are thinking about it? Is it like a pain in the bum, or?
It is an onerous task, and I have had several executors over the years say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, especially where the estate is complex or where there's conflict between beneficiaries, 100%. And it's often right towards the pointy end when things are getting settled and distributed that they really are over it. And I don't blame them, but it's an onerous job. You can pay them, and I would definitely recommend considering paying your executors if they aren't, you know, a spouse or something like that. If you're appointing a friend or someone in that sort of category, that would be a recommendation. Because, you know, estates can go on for months, years. So it can be a long time.
It's a lot of time commitment, particularly for those that have lives of their own, their own families, their own kids, their own bills to pay, their own jobs. And I guess a word of caution to a lot of people that listen in, particularly doctors who often have very complex entity structures. They've got their private practice, they've got a company, they've got multiple trusts, and then all of a sudden they think it's great to create a shell company overseas so that its money can be routed. Imagine the executor trying to deal with all that when you die. So just make sure that you leave a very clear footprint and very clear instruction manual for your executor, because we talk a lot about accumulating wealth, but we never really talk about the back end and the complexities with accumulative wealth comes in as well. You mentioned in the last episode about the concept of a probate. What does that mean? And you know, what's the difference between that and like a grant or grant representation? And these are all very legal speak. So
yeah,
just go easy on the audience on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So a grant of representation is the broad term used to describe different types of grants that you can get, right? So probate is the one everyone hears and they talk about probate. A grant of probate is where there's a valid will and it is proving the will and the executor's appointment. Okay, so you're granted probate after an application to the Supreme Court of Victoria or the Supreme Court of your state or territory. So there's different types of grants. You've got your probate. There's also letters of administration, which is where someone dies without a will, and that's applied for by the next of kin, the senior next of kin of that person. But we also have other types of grants. So letters of administration with the will annexed, that comes into play if maybe the executor that you've appointed in your will is unable to act for whatever reason. And then you've got limited grants. So limited grants, I'm not going to try and pronounce them. They're in all Latin terms and there's a lot of them, but that can be used where, you know, an estate desperately needs a grant quickly to protect an asset, or it could be a limited grant in the event that the executor has, say, dementia or something like that, so someone else is acting in that role. There's a whole bunch of different types, but, yeah, they can be used in various circumstances.
So let's go through the scenario here. Let's say, you know, I've got a couple of properties, some stock market stuff and some super, and the person passes away. They've got a will, they've got an executor, and they've got a couple of kids, and they've got a guardian for that kids. Doctor's done the death certificate. And the executor goes, Marley, this person's passed away, and brings along the death certificate. Just walk us through the steps that you would then advise the executor and some of the things that they need to do in terms of step one, step two, step three. I'm assuming you're going to need some sort of death certificate. Is that right? You're going to need some sort of verification?
Yeah. We need the official births, deaths, marriages, death certificate with the cause of death, because the court need to confirm that they think the person had capacity to make a will. That and the original will. So that's the first step. My first thing that I'll tell a client is make sure property is insured. So protect the assets of the estate, because executors have an obligation to do that. And then I'll talk them through a few things. Their right to obtain executor's commission, for example, what the steps are in applying for a grant of probate. So you need to do an advertisement. You need to do an inventory of assets and liabilities. I'll talk them through the six-month rule, which we mentioned last episode, where an estate's open for a claim and the risks involved in distributing before that's over. We'll talk about the steps involved in transferring property. So it's a bit of a process with property, because you need to transfer it from the deceased person's name into the name of the executor first and then into the name of the beneficiary, or it can be sold. So those are the things that we'll typically go through in a conference, our first meeting with an executor. It goes for about an hour, get to know the executor a bit, learn about the deceased person and review the will. Contrary to popular belief, in Australia, we don't do will readings. So it's not this typical thing that you see on TV, people sitting around hearing a will for the first time. Although I would love to be asked to do that. It hasn't happened yet though.
That's got to be a TV show in itself.
Yeah.
You know, there's Gogglebox, I think it is. We should call it Willow Box,
yes,
where basically a group of lawyers and clients just sit around and just read wills, and we just watch the reactions. That should be quite entertaining. It'd probably be a show that I'd watch.
Yep.
You mentioned about insuring the properties. That's a good point. I never thought about it. So how does an executor insure a property that used to belong to the deceased?
Yeah.
So do they, because if they ring up the insurance company, how would that happen practically?
Yeah, they'll call up the insurance company, either insure it in the name of the estate if the insurance company will allow it. They're all different. Otherwise, insure it in the name of the executor. And with that in mind, you should also consider changing the locks if, you know, anyone has access to the property. The terms of the insurance can change a little bit. Like, you need to make sure that someone's visiting the property monthly. Usually it's like two consecutive nights a month or something like that if it's vacant. So yeah, and also contents insurance if it's a house full of, you know, valuable assets.
I guess you also mentioned about, you know, actually going to the Supreme Court. Is this all done online now? So for example, death certificates for doctors, we do it all online.
Mm.
And it's done online, and I think you can print it out. How does it work in terms of getting that probate and actually going to the Supreme Court? Is it all done remotely, or does the executor have to physically go to the Supreme Court and you have to go there and...
No, it's done on the papers. So what that means is we actually do have an electronic system now in Victoria. It's been around for a few years. I think it came out in 2020, and it's awesome. You just upload all of your documents onto the system, and it's an electronic grant. It used to be an old paper grant with parchment and the big red court seal on it, which are cool documents, but they can be a little bit impractical. So yeah, all done electronically. You do need to send the original will there though. So we do that by express registered post, so because they need the original will to grant probate. So that's, and they'll keep the original will once it's done. But yeah, it's all done electronically. No one needs to attend court. Yeah, just assessed on the papers.
And does the Supreme Court charge a fee to do all this?
Yeah, there's the advertisement fee, which is about $25 at the moment. It goes up every financial year. And then you've got your filing fees. And the filing fee is a sliding scale, so it depends on the value of the estate. It starts at about $65 for an estate worth under $500,000, and the maximum is about $2,500 for an estate worth $3 million plus.
Okay, so that fees goes not to you but straight to the Supreme Court.
That's right.
People. And in terms of, obviously, the executor or the deceased estate needs to pay you for your time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing all this work. There's a cost associated with generating a will and estate, but there's a cost associated with executing it and actually administering it post-death, and that's a separate fee. And is that something, is there like a flat rate, or is it like an hourly fee, or how does that work in for law firms? I mean, you can use your personal example if you want to. Mm. If you don't want to mention figures, that's okay.
No, I'm happy to chat about it. So Nest is a fixed fee firm for everything. So we're fixed for the grant of probate. It's about $3,500, and fixed for administration. I've worked at previous firms before where half of it's fixed, obtaining the grants fixed, but everything else is done on an hourly rate basis. And some firms also charge hourly rate for the probate as well. Yeah, it just depends.
Okay, cool. And these fees are in addition to creating a will and you know, actually talking with a client. May I ask how much it would cost on average for a listener to go to Nest and have you and create their own will and estate? What's the average sort of cost we're looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing standard wills, so not discretionary trusts, which we spoke about last episode, a couple's probably looking at $1,300, about $880 for a single person. Discretionary trusts, obviously, they add a lot of complexity there, so it's about double the cost, which we also do fixed fee as well, and we have fixed fee rates for add-ons, extra complexities. So if you've got a family trust or a company that you'd like us to review and provide for a succession plan for that, self-managed super funds, those things.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned discretionary trust. You mean, is that the same as a testamentary trust?
Discretionary trust. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. That's the full DTT for short is what we call it.
Sure. And then if you want a medical treatment decision maker form and enduring power, these are sort of add-ons that you can just add on to that.
The prices I gave are inclusive of that. We do it as an estate planning package. So that package, let's say a couple, $1,300, would include two wills, signing, storage of the documents, your powers of attorney, your medical treatment decision makers, super advice, and you each get one of our workbook letters of wishes as well.
So in the scheme of things, you're looking at potentially around the sort of $3,000 mark, you know, for two people, $3,000 to $4,000 to get everything done in terms of creating a will and estate planning. Then you're looking at about $3,000 to $3,500 for that probate once you die. And then you're looking at potentially another few thousand to sort of administer the estate, all that sort of stuff. So the whole thing from really cradle to grave, let's say, is less than 10 grand. Now, in the scheme of things, for most listeners, you know, although that sounds like a lot of money, but we're talking, you're not spending this every year. You're spending this at most, maybe, you know, every sort of 5 years to review a will. I'm assuming it's going to be cheaper to review a will. Is that
correct?
Right? Or is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Yeah. So it's not that much. So if you're listening in, you know, compared to what you would spend on a holiday, dare I say, some of our listeners go on extravagant holidays, as they send me photos, you know, you really have to think, what's more important? And what if you go on a holiday and your whole family gets wiped out in a plane crash, right? So that's important to have a will. Every time you do these at-risk activities, I call them, it's really important to have a will.
And if you don't have one and it is a mess, right, your family is going to be paying more money dealing with that after you die than you're going to pay to establish a will in the first place, right? So it all comes out in the wash in that instance, and it'll come out heaps more expensive in the long run.
Yeah, sounds like a real pain if you don't have it. Yeah. And it's a real pain for your family. It's a real gift in order to be able to establish a will so that they have some sort of instructions. Remember, they're grieving. You're dead. I mean, you don't care, but they're grieving. They still have to deal with all the nonsense that you've left them, dare I say. We'll take a quick break. When we come back in this episode, I want to talk about the role of the courts, and also we talked a little bit about digital assets. We want to go into that a bit more, and then we'll finish up. So we'll be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, we're back. We're with Marley Viero from Ness Legal, and this is the second episode in the series of Will and Estate Planning. In this particular episode, we're talking specifically about administration of the will. We mentioned briefly in the previous episode, can a court, like you've done all this, right? You've gone to the court. Can they sort of say this will is not valid and just shut it down?
Yeah, they can, absolutely. So we mentioned earlier about death certificates and the cause of death being on the death certificate. So that's one of the most common things, right, is making sure that someone has capacity to do a will, right? If you've, you know, got your elderly parent who's got dementia to sign a will on their deathbed, right, the court's going to have some questions. So where someone has certain illnesses listed on their death certificate, whether it be a neurological disorder or, you know, even some types of brain cancer, the court wants extra evidence from a doctor. And Dev, you may have, you know, experienced this in your practice of people asking for testamentary capacity evidence. So they can deem a will invalid in those circumstances. And also if they're not executed properly, you can get through informal wills if they don't have the requirements of a typical will, which we mentioned in episode one, but it's a pain.
Right. I've actually been involved in assessing people's testamentary capacity. And in fact, quite classically, they come just prior to signing a will. Yeah. I've actually been involved in two very cases that I remember vividly where the family member was coercing the aged care resident and the elderly person to sign the will.
Yep.
And putting words and thoughts into their head in front of me while I'm trying to assess their capacity. And I just basically stopped and I said, I don't think this person has capacity. I don't think we can do this. Mm. Now, sometimes I've outsourced it to a geriatrician who does these sort of things. I understand lawyers can also assess capacity because capacity is one of those things you're assessing for a specific purpose. So, you know, I might not have capacity to do certain things at 3 o'clock in the morning,
Yeah. But
I have capacity to do the same thing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think lawyers get involved in this as well in terms of assessment.
Yeah, we're always assessing capacity for any client, really. It doesn't even have to be an age thing because the buck stops with us. Even if I have a letter from a doctor like yourself saying, I think this person has capacity. I'm doing my own tests. We have a legal test. It's in a case called Banks and Goodfellow, and that sets out the legal test for capacity.
A lot of doctors don't actually formally get trained how to test for capacity. In fact, it's not even included in our training. And a lot of doctors are very uncomfortable doing it. And a lot of doctors won't do it because they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's not uncommon that a lot of doctors probably doing it incorrectly.
Yep.
Because it's a very, very serious thing, particularly when it comes to will and estates. In terms of invalidity of a will, apart from obviously coercion is one of those, incapacity is one of those, where a will has been signed when a person doesn't have capacity, which goes to show doctors, death certificates are really important.
Yep.
What you write matters. I've seen death certificates being rejected because it was so vague and it was just sort of, what was the cause of death? And they sort of write something, you know, generic, which you got to have a specific cause of death. And it makes a big difference to the family to administer the estate. So it's a really important thing. Again, a lot of healthcare workers and doctors don't realize how important that document is.
It is.
What you write in that.
I agree.
It is incredibly important.
I've had one matter before where I drafted a will for somebody. I met them and they definitely had capacity. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that they had capacity. They died a few years later and the death certificate just said dementia years. And, you know, maybe I did the will 4 years ago and they definitely had capacity then. But the court had questions because, you know, the deceased was 80-something at the time and they only had dementia for a year, at most two, before they died. And that caused so much of a headache for the family at that point, trying to get medical evidence. And you're right, a lot of doctors are declining to do it now, which it's interesting to know it's not part of your training, but we are seeing more and more doctors refuse.
Yeah, so certainly not part of general practice training officially, as far as I'm aware, unless they've magically changed that, but maybe part of geriatrics.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have proper training to be able to do that. But even then, it's such a sensitive thing. Just for listeners who may not know about this sort of years and all that death certificate, so basically when you fill out a death certificate, you have a primary cause of death, and then you have all these antecedent causes of death, where all this sort of secondary conditions which are related to the primary condition. So, you know, for example, patient may eventually die of a heart problem, but they've got all these other issues like blood pressure and cholesterol and diabetes that have led to that heart problem. And you have to actually specify the duration of those conditions in the primary cause and also in the secondary and antecedent causes. So, you know, and my understanding is it goes in seconds, minutes, hours, days, months, and years. And you've got to be very, very specific. And it's really important to be as specific as possible. In terms of challenging a will, does a will get challenged in the same court system as where it's administered, or is it a separate process altogether?
You can lodge a claim in either the Supreme Court, which is where probate is granted, or you can lodge a claim in the county court if the estate is of a certain value. Most, I would say, go through the Supreme Court of Victoria, though. Yeah.
Right, but I'm assuming it's a different team of people that are dealing with a challenge compared to the team of people that
Correct.
Are dealing with the actual
yeah.
administration.
It goes away from the probate office, the probate court, and the probate registrar, and it goes into, yeah, the trial divisions.
Right, okay. And you mentioned about, could take about 12 months. That's the sort of rough time frame potentially on average you're looking at. So it's not something that happens overnight, and sometimes years. What's the longest you've seen?
Probably like 2 or 3 years, I would say, the longest I've dealt with. That was when I was a junior lawyer, and it was when I picked up as I came to that firm, and it was sort of given to me and had been handed down through a few lawyers over the years. If you've got an estate claim and it does go to court, the first thing the court orders now is mediation, right? So you have to go to mediation, and unless it's inappropriate for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's family violence or something like that, but you need to go to mediation and try and settle it that way. And I think it's something like 3% of cases go all the way to a final hearing, so most cases are able to settle before that.
Right.
Yeah.
And when it goes to a final hearing, is that literally lawyers or solicitors going to the courts and arguing your case?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
like the
and that's, very
that's what you see on TV. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
Like, it can be like hundreds of thousands of dollars because you're getting barristers involved. You need to get evidence done. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of time, and you pay for it. And the estate pays for it for the executor. So that's the other thing. It's in everybody's best interest to settle this as soon as possible, because it just means the estate is dwindling more and more.
One of my mates is in the legal field, and he was saying barristers can cost between $500 to $1,500 an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Potentially depending on the day. So it's quite significant expenditure coming off your loved one's estate,
yep.
who if they've listened to any of Dev's episodes, have slaved away all these years to accumulate their wealth by keeping their costs low and investing over time. Now, last question, digital assets. We talked about it briefly in the previous episode. Can I just sort of, if I die, my digital assets kind of go to the executor and then they go to the beneficiaries. But a lot of people store some really secretive things in the digital assets, right? Email accounts, for example.
Yep.
Can you sort of say, nah, just lock it out. I don't want anyone to know what's in my email account or that sort of stuff. Because basically the executor has full access, is my understanding. Or can you sort of stop that?
They do and they don't. Because like we said last time, it depends on each provider. So if you wanted to keep that secret, I'm sure you could set it up through the back end of that particular provider. And even down to things like passcodes on your phone, that is often quite challenging for people as well. If you don't know the passcode to someone's phone, that unlocks everything, right? You know, all of your apps, all of those things. So generally with a death certificate and a will, though, an executor is going to get the information that they need. If they can prove who they are, prove that you've died, and prove that they're the executor in the will, they'll probably be able to access your bits and pieces for sure.
Yeah, look, I have a lot of secrets in my email account. And the biggest secret I have is all the transcripts to all the episodes that I've ever done, which I've actually been a bit lazy uploading the transcripts. So if I die and you wanted the transcript, make sure you contact my executor because they'll be able to access it and tell you the transcripts. Because surprisingly, I got a fair bit of requests for transcripts.
Yeah.
They feel reading rather than listening to a podcast. So there you go. You might have to wait till I pass away, listeners. I apologize for that. That's all we have time for. So we talked a fair bit about will and estate planning, fairly detailed two-part series. Really appreciate your time, Marley, and really appreciate the resources of Nest Legal. We will put your business details in the show notes. And just to be completely clear, Marley hasn't paid to be a guest on this podcast. I don't get any fees if you create a will through Marley, or if you die, I don't get part of your estate, which is a bit of a sad thing. So this is all transparent. And literally, literally just emailed her saying, would you mind coming on the episode and really appreciate your time and giving up an hour or two.
Thanks for having me.
So that's what we have time for. Remember to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform that you may be using. Leave it on all of the platforms. That's even better. And please leave a positive review. The more reviews we get, the more access people get to these podcasts and spread the word. So that's it for Marley Viero, Nest Legal. If you don't have a will, gee, you're taking a big risk. Make sure you go and get it done or learn about it. Talk about it. Tell people you've got a will. Have a family discussion. The best time to do it would be during important days, birthdays, Christmas, etc. Yeah, it sucks. You know, it sucks to talk about death. It sucks to talk about wishes. But I'll tell you, once you've done it, the immense pressure, the relief, the immense a pleasure that you have knowing that your loved ones are secure in the event that you die. I think that's important. It's really important. And also a special message to doctors and nurses looking after people who are dying. It's okay to mention about this. It's okay to make sure that people understand what their rights are when it comes to will and estate planning. It's okay to talk about advanced care planning. It's okay to talk about EPOAs and medical treatment decision makers. Really important. And I don't think we do it very well. We can do a lot better job at this and be advocates for our patients when it comes to their health, but also their wealth and their literacy as well when it comes to these topics. So until next time, my name's Dev Raga. This is Dev Raga Personal Finance. Please make sure you stay safe.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.